Welcome to Galaxy Brains.
An infinite amount of cash.
I'm your host, Alex Thorne.
The U.S. banking system is sound and resilient.
Bitcoin made a new all-time high.
If you're not long, you're short.
Satoshi's going to come on there, laugh hysterically, go quiet. All Bitcoin's going to be erased.
Bitcoin's the best crypto asset.
Bitcoin is going to zero.
Welcome back to Galaxy Brains. Bitcoin not zero still, so that's positive. And I'm your host, Alex Thorne. Thank you for listening. Hey, got some interesting news, but before we get to this, I need to remind you to refer to the link to the disclaimer on the podcast notes. Note that none of the information in this podcast constitutes investment advice or an offer recommendation or solicitation by Galaxy Digital or any of its affiliates to buy or sell any securities. Phineas, my friend, we are back as usual. We've got a great episode today. The Bitcoin halving happened. Last week, we're going to talk with my friend Brian Wright, co-head of Bitcoin Mining at Galaxy, about the halving, the future of mining and fees, and also what Galaxy Mining has coming up. What do you think? We just cut that interview. How'd that go in your mind?
Very engaging. Lots of happenings.
Yep.
Via and because of the halving, and I think it's interesting to hear two folks who know a lot about it break it down.
Yeah, some other news here. Well, of course, we're going to check in with our friend Bimnet at BB from Galaxy Trading, as always, too. But some news happening in crypto this week in the crypto world. One, the IRS released a 1099 DA. That's their digital asset 1099, a draft version of it. This is the thing that they give you at the end of the year in your brokerage account that has the tax information. But they also provide to the IRS, like your brokerage firm sends it to them. The broker rule that was passed as part of the 2021 infrastructure bill requires that maybe it was 22. I can't remember the bill. It adds this authority to the IRS. And now the big question is, it's one thing if like your Coinbase account or like a normal exchange is going to do this. Like, they're a centralized company. They're regulated. But the draft includes that unhosted wallet providers should be providing this too, which I think is an extreme overreach. I've written about this a lot. Like a piece of software that lets you self-custody Bitcoin is normally not in a position to file this or know what your cost basis is, right? So tricky, that's still in a draft. Tax news to start us off. Block, the maker of Cash App, they just announced that they finished designing their new Bitcoin mining ASIC chip. So I don't know, maybe we've got a new manufacturer. And then this is interesting. In Hong Kong, Bitcoin and ETH ETFs are set to start trading for the first time on Tuesday, April 30th. I don't know, could be big, although I was told by the guys at Bloomberg that the entire Hong Kong ETF market is smaller than just the Bitcoin ETFs in the United States.
Wow.
So potentially something there, but it's not like a U.S.-sized capital market. Granted, none are. And then CZ, CEO, former CEO of Binance, the largest exchange in crypto. Remember, he pled guilty to a variety of charges, mostly stemming from lax or non-existent, in some cases, AML KYC policies at Binance. The government paid a big fine and pled guilty, and we're waiting on sentencing. The government is asking for a 3-year prison sentence for CZ. I think the recommended for the charges he pled guilty to is 18 months. We're going to find out on Tuesday whether CZ, what the sentence will be. Pretty wild. I mean, different than SBF for sure, because Binance apparently and thankfully was solvent. So he didn't steal anyone's money, right? So it's a little bit different. But nonetheless, that's going to be a big story, I think, next week. So check out for that. Hey, also, I know some people have been upset that we switched to the static intro and not haven't been rapping the intro anymore, but fear not, we are going to be rapping more separately. And this is a great example. Stay tuned to the end of this episode for a special, having themed rap song, Captain Youth and Intangible Coins. So at the end of this episode, called Stealing Time. It's really good. It's literally at the end of this episode. You listen to the whole thing. You don't fast forward. And anyway, let's go to Bimnet. Let's go now to our friend Bimnet, a BB from Galaxy Trading. As always, Bimnet, welcome to Galaxy Brains.
Thanks for having me.
So kind of a quiet time. I mean, you had the Bitcoin halving, which had a big impact on the network. The network obviously becoming – the monetary asset becoming scarcer, but fees spiking because of runes and ordinals and stuff. But we're going to talk with Brian Wright from Galaxy Mining in a minute about that. But otherwise, though, like BTC, like kind of sideways, what equities like have been down, but kind of like sideways at the moment, like it's sort of –
yeah, they've been down for a couple weeks.
We waiting for a new catalyst, or
yes,
yeah. What are we waiting on?
Well, earnings.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think this week about 160 companies in the S&P 500 report earnings, including some big tech names.
Yeah.
And so that will broadly give the market a sense of, you know, how healthy the economy is, you know, in terms of, you know, are people spending money, how healthy corporate balance sheets are. So it's I know, you know, broadly impact risk sentiment.
Yeah.
You know, if people start feeling good about stocks again, that should be good for crypto. That should be bad for the dollar, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really important to pay attention to these earnings. I pay closest attention to the consumer discretionary companies that, you know, have a bigger kind of or a stronger pulse on where the U.S. consumer is.
Mm-hmm.
Also credit card companies as well. One interesting tidbit, one of the lower quality credit card companies recently reported earnings, and they had their provisions for loan losses start to tick higher. And it was back to levels like that you saw in like 2008 and like around the financial crisis. We're talking about like a provisioning of slightly over like 5%.
So wait, setting aside capital to cover those losses? Is that what that means?
Yeah. And like the delinquency rates are you know.
So they set aside more as they expect more losses, mm-hmm. basically. So mm-hmm. you're saying what the consumer is now stretched and they don't have extra cash anymore. They're in debt.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the debt is at a higher cost than ever because interest rates have gone up. Savings have come down a lot because far less transfer payments from, mm-hmm. from the government. It's also wages have not kept up with inflation. And so it's a constant burn on people. And more people are getting stuck in like the debt trap and just spending more money than they're bringing in. And so you are starting to see cracks in that economy, in the, you know, everyday person, I would say. And then the other thing to pay attention to, I think, from this earnings season is the ability of corporates to respond to increasing costs by raising prices. So, you know, over the past couple of years, you've seen a lot of consumer staple companies, your big conglomerate types, be able to pass through the costs, the increased cost of commodities, labor, mm-hmm. and other services to the consumer. But that was because the consumer was in a much healthier spot. And so they could absorb that. But now, you know, if you're continuing to see some of those costs go up, right, and there's less of an ability of those corporates to pass through that pricing to consumers, where is it going to have to come from? It's going to have to come from their bottom line.
Yep.
And so you're going to see margin compression as the consumer kind of tightens up. And then obviously, you know, consumption is like 70% of the U.S. economy. And so, you know, like,
Are people consuming, and what
are they telling you about what they're likely to consume going forward? These right. corporates are so good and so precise at forecasting every bit of foot traffic in their stores, every bit of sales, etc. And so when they speak, you got to listen. And generally, earnings season's a great time to kind of, you know, step back and be like, what's going on?
Yeah. So a number of interesting things that I'm hearing from you here and reasons why earnings matter. One, obviously, that you mentioned at the top was it can help, you know, people become bullish on stocks. Like that can sort of change the whole attitude and the risk sentiment in the country in terms of on the investor side, which can impact things like crypto and the dollar and whatnot. But also that you're reading through some of these earnings, like looking through them to help understand, engage the consumer's health.
Yes.
Overall, which obviously has an impact later on inflation and whatnot, right? If they're all spending a ton, then inflation could be stickier. Like,
yeah, and it's also like, are they laying off people?
Right.
You know,
that impacts the employment situation, which is one of the Fed's mandates, right? So very interesting. And then I wanted to ask you, too, when we think about, like, how does this, I guess, so no Fed speak? No, we're talking about on the macro data side.
We're in blackout right now, yep.
So what does that mean? As they lead into the FOMC or something, they can't talk?
Correct.
Yeah.
And right now, like, even if they were talking, like, it's just a bunch of noise. All of them come out, and, like, there's a gazillion speakers every day.
Yeah.
And it's like, I get the message. Like, data's been hot.
Yeah.
You're less likely to cut.
Yeah.
Like, you're telling me it in 15 different ways.
And you've been like, pointing this out for several months that, like, they would probably get here and you weren't sure whether they would get here. You were saying they absolutely should get here and not cut because the economy was
hot. It's fine.
Yeah, but now it seems consensus. I mean, obviously the futures markets on rates are basically pricing in barely any cuts, like one cut, maybe one or two cuts.
Half. Yeah.
Down from what, like seven cuts?
Yes.
In January, they thought we were going to have seven cuts.
Which was insane. but I mean, if you really think about it, like I think your 1 year inflation rates are like, you know, the average like high threes. Your 6 month stuff is now looking at like, you know, probably like low, you know, probably still high threes, mid, you know, high three. But now you're like 3 month run rate of the past like couple of inflation prints is like mid fours.
Yeah.
And so like it doesn't seem like you're anywhere close to your inflation target.
Yeah.
And the one thing I would highlight as well is that, you know, market expectations for inflation are, you know, pretty important. And I think that's what you have to monitor the most, because if inflation just keeps continuing, these expectations are just going to like start to break out. And then people are going to be like, you know, are they going to doubt the Fed's ability to actually achieve their mandate?
And that'll make
and
it
they're
even
gonna
go
lose,
higher.
Yeah. And they're going to lose some credibility and stuff.
Right.
But I just don't know how much more inflation people can really put up with. Because as we've talked before on the past episodes, like you are getting taxed because of inflation. People are going to end up spending less on, you know, tons of activities if their essentials are costing them way more.
And they are. I mean, we all see this. I have a family. We go and buy groceries. You know, some single people in New York may not go to the supermarket very often, but we do. And it's been getting more expensive for years at this point. Also, looking at things like electricity cost is going up, like gasoline, obviously. But, you know, the gas, we don't drive too much. I mean, it's been kind of expensive for, I don't know, maybe I'm old. I remember when it was like $1 a gallon.
So pretty much
anything over like two seems kind of expensive to me, but it's been up. But really the one I looked at recently was the electricity bill. I was like, unfortunately I don't live in Texas where you have a much freer market on electricity and they have a bunch of renewables.
Mm-hmm.
I live in one of these many parts of the country where the grid is controlled by one operator with totally opaque pricing. Yeah, which is how most of the country's electricity, but it's we're talking a fair amount and we haven't even come into those summer months
where
it gets really hot. So they're hurting. And also, you see these videos on TikTok. I'm not on there, but they get posted on X, right? And people are hurting. They're talking about it a lot. A lot of videos of people being like, how – and by the way, some of these people coming around to the, wait a second, why can't we just print more money kind of question.
Oh, yeah.
Which is getting pretty interesting.
Yeah.
TikTok set to be banned in the United States. The president just signed a bill that forces the sale of it or bans it. Just as another aside here about the economy. It does seem like the consumer – the average everyday consumer, you can even call them the voter, is in a lot worse shape than
and
people.
And it's
admit.
Not getting any better.
Right, it's actually getting worse.
And I don't think it will get that much better.
I know.
There are no magical solutions to this stuff. Like, the government's not going to stop printing money.
In fact, they're printing more.
They're printing more money.
So, you know, like record issuance, right?
And and it's just like it comes down to like the wealth inequality stuff,
yeah.
Right? Like rich people can keep their assets, their you know savings and assets that are more resilient to inflation.
They even appreciate.
Appreciate even further, yeah. Right? And so the people that own homes right now, right, as housing keeps going up, they're protected against inflation because you know they rent to people, and as rents go up, they'll raise their rents and they'll keep up with the inflation, right? And like that's what people spend a lot of their money on is housing and stuff. And so, you know, and then if you don't own these assets and like if you want to hedge against inflation, gold, silver, like those things are already trading super well at the dead highs. And like if you really want to keep up, you got to have big positions in them. And so it's like it's just so bad.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, like, which is crazy, but like part of the reason why social media exists is to keep people like in a malaise so that they don't focus on this stuff. But so the government probably does need TikTok. They just don't know it.
Yeah. I mean, I think right now it's working against them, or they think. I mean, I don't know exactly why. Don't get me wrong. I have no idea, but it does seem like it is a powerful tool for ByteDance to impact, like a Chinese company to impact America. But again, people, I've seen videos, they are furious about this. They view it as a free speech issue. This is, I thought, a free market. That's very strange, but a lot of content on there about the average, like from people all across the country saying they can't afford basic staples, that they're working 2-3 jobs. And, you know, I also think about the employment number, right?
Like such a crazy
a lot
number.
Of that employment is part-time employment.
But it's also, the numbers are wrong. They're statistically,
and they do, don't they update the numbers like every time? They're like way off all the time.
But I'll give you an example. This is the one that's really been trending recently. We're a nation of what, 330 million people? I don't know. Maybe the labor force is like 130 million people of that, or maybe a bit higher than that. Mm-hmm. But initial jobless claims every week are $210,000. 200,000 people.
Same number.
Doesn't make sense for a population in a sample size that big.
Yeah.
That the variability is that low.
Right.
Like, it's insane to me. And it was crazy when the job market was really hot. Every single month got job revisions higher. There's a huge spread between, you know, the household survey and like the employer survey. Like, there's so many weird statistical anomalies in this data. It's like, it's hard not to, like, not saying you need to be a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
But
you have to wonder.
You have to question this stuff.
Yeah.
Like, even the, like, you know, if I'm a Fed official, like, I'm going down to the people taking the surveys.
You're like the guy in The Big Short, right? Steve Carell's character, he's flying down and looking at it because, like, the data didn't make sense.
This
is what I'm saying about the TikTok videos is, like, look, you've got data on one hand, but then you just, like, hear from the people that it is bad. I mean, so I don't know. It's a very tough thing. Anyway, it seems like we're a little bit of holding pattern. We got to let earnings play out. I posted this on Monday or on Tuesday that it was the lowest day and like, or that it was the seventh ETF lowest volumes. Day ever in ETF, Bitcoin ETF volumes, actually quite close to the lowest, but there were some in February that were, so just people like crab market people trying to just wait and see basically.
No, honestly,
Have Fed for what, several more weeks.
Here's the thing. I love Bitcoin. I think it's a great long-term holding. But has it lost a little bit of its short-term momentum?
Yeah.
Probably. And you can see that reflected in, you know, the volumes.
Yeah.
In addition, like, you know, you had the halving, you had the ETF, right? A lot of the big narratives for crypto have played out.
Right.
Yeah. To be frank.
That's right.
And so, you know, a lot of times markets need catalysts.
Yeah.
And markets need, and like, especially in such a speculative asset like Bitcoin, you know, people like to see good momentum to continue to participate.
Right.
And so, you know, to the hardcore Bitcoiners, this is just noise.
It might even be good.
This is just like path to accumulation.
I have plenty of people who are like, this is great. We can stack here.
You can stack. Everybody that's like in the Bitcoin game is like, I need more time to get more Bitcoin.
Right.
Like, I got to have more.
But it's obvious. I mean, if you look at the ETF flows as one version, like you can just see like huge run in February and March. And then April's been kind of like basically almost more anemic every day. I think we might have decided that we bottomed. I think last week. We had, I think, basically the lowest total inflow ever, the lowest for the biggest ETFs inflow, right? So I think we maybe have bottomed, but remember too, on that flows story with the ETF, we haven't had these wealth management platforms and stuff turn on at all yet. Our entire analysis was 14 billion in year one takes us to 75K in price, all from a small percentage of these wealth management platforms. Well, we had 13 and it brought us to 738 and none of those platforms had turned on yet. So presumably there is more demand side to unlock.
No, absolutely.
But I agree. It feels, you know, we're sort of just chilling.
No, but like that's really what you need for the long-term thesis is just more access.
I want multiples every month.
No.
Remember when it was 16.5? I was sitting right in the seat.
Yeah.
A year and a half ago, a year and a quarter ago.
Brutal times.
Well,
Jesus.
We'll keep watching and we will let you know. There it is, my friend, Bimnetta Bibi from Galaxy Trading.
Thanks for having me.
Let's go now to our guest, Brian Wright, co-head of Bitcoin Mining at Galaxy. Brian, welcome to Galaxy Brains.
Great to be here. I've always looked forward to being on this.
I've been a big fan of Brian, and we'll get into a little bit about we're going to tease this too, a little bit about our history together. We worked at Fidelity together, but I've had Austin on. I had Amanda on. I think Rachel had even been on from the mining team. BZ, I think, maybe it was on once.
Yeah.
But I haven't had Brian on.
Maybe
Galaxy
you had
Brains.
Blake too. It and was I had Blake. Hold down on
basically
me. Yeah.
Everybody but Brian has been on, but now Brian is here for our big post-Bitcoin halving breakdown. So great to have you on Galaxy Brains, Brian. Bitcoin halving, the fourth halving happened. We're in the fifth mining epoch or supply epoch of Bitcoin. Miners are getting 3.125 BTC now as a subsidy. It's the inflation of Bitcoin. There's about 6.25% of supply left to mine.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The event was, so we're recording on Wednesday. This comes out on Thursday. It was last Friday, the halving, block 840,000. You know, what happened?
Yeah. So a lot to talk about here, but I think the biggest story was probably transaction fees. But before I even get to that, also there was no reorg. Right. That was actually really interesting because a lot of people were calling for a reorg and that it would actually only be economically rational to try to reorg. And the rationale on that is that now that we have this concept of, you know, rare sats and this epic sat, which was the first sat in the block mined in this epoch, that is, you know, projected to be valued at in the millions of dollars, actually, for that sat. Because many were calling for
it. I'm rolling my eyes at this rare sats, yeah. But okay, yes.
So if there was demand for that, you know, some people were calling, okay, let's you know, try to reorg, actually, if you're the pool that does not mine that block.
So
did not happen.
So block 839,999 is the last block.
Yep.
And then 840,000 gets mined. That's the first in the new epoch.
Yes.
And then the reorg would be, rather than then, if you don't win that block,
yes,
rather than build on top of that, you actually go back and try to build a new chain on top, yes, of 839,999.
Yes.
And you basically, if you end up not successful, and by the way, there was an attempt, it looked like, but it was not successful. Mm-hmm. If you end up not successful, you basically waste money mining on the wrong chain,
yes,
for a while. So that's the opportunity cost you're talking,
exactly,
about here. Yeah.
Yeah. So there is material opportunity cost, but it was a high transaction fee block and then with some expected extra value, but there ended up being another block mined. So block 840,001, like 1 minute later.
Yeah.
And then maybe another one 6 or 7 minutes
after
that.
It was pretty fast.
So we had a sequence of really fast blocks. And so there was no opportunity to, which I think it's almost good probably that there was just like no story sort of around that.
Yeah.
But I mean, everything went as it's supposed to. You know, we continue to have the hardest money in existence. And, you know, 3.125 Bitcoin is now getting issued. Yeah,
yeah.
It got even harder.
There was, I saw a small pool called Spider Pool, which I've never heard of, that was mining on that old block for several blocks, mm-hmm, while everyone else had moved on to just mining the heaviest chain.
Yeah.
You know, I guess, I don't know. I was rolling my eyes at the rare sats because of all the things in the ordinals world, this emanates from the ordinals world, right? The idea, the concept of, well, if you're going to individually label every Satoshi, then maybe some are, you know, rarer or more valuable.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of silly personally, but regardless, you're right. On the market, they can go for some money.
Yeah.
But
the big story was really fees.
Because that was the thing.
Yeah.
Even if you went for that additional rare sat, which could theoretically net you a bunch of money.
Yeah.
You could also just go for the block itself because fees,
right,
were so high.
Yeah. So there was over 40 Bitcoin total in that first block. So block 840,000 with, you know, 3.125, the first block with 3.125 Bitcoin as a subsidy, and then over 37 Bitcoin in just fees. But then, yeah, you talked about opportunity costs. Then after that, there were a number of blocks that were actually over 20 Bitcoin
in
total fees.
Yeah.
So these were really, really profitable blocks to be mining. And so a huge opportunity cost not trying to mine those. So it made a lot of sense why there was no reorg attempt. But I think as a result, you know, as a miner, I had a great weekend, to be honest. You know, and miners everywhere did. And it surprised me a little bit to the upside, which was awesome to see. Like, we and all other miners, we just had our best weekend in ages, and it actually happened,
right,
post-halving. And you can see this on, you know, hash price is what a lot of miners like to use. And there's just this massive, massive spike over the weekend as a result of all this runes activity. And so, you know, blocks were sustainably, you know, over 10 Bitcoin. I think they were averaging maybe even over 10 Bitcoin
for
in
days.
Fees. Yeah, at least like the next 100 blocks or so. And so, you know, like just even some interesting stats from this, you know, we had 20 of the top 100 blocks in total fees were mined since the halving, right?
Yeah.
In the last like 4 days or so, basically.
Yeah.
And you know, a lot of those blocks actually in the 100 blocks all time that had the most fees, you know, some of those were like really early blocks where, oh, let me send 35 Bitcoin in fees because it's like $5 or something like that. And then year to date, we've had over 20% of all transaction fee revenue for miners since the halving.
Yeah.
Despite, you know, that only accounting for roughly like 2% of total.
Yeah, we're what, like 75 days into the year, and
yeah,
like 20% of all fees were mined in like the last 5 days.
Yeah, so
yeah,
you know, really early on, and I am expecting, you know, fees to decline. It dipped a little bit on Monday of this week, so a few days after, but then actually went back up Tuesday, and you were getting 2.5-3 Bitcoin fee blocks most of the day yesterday.
So literally like 50% of miner revenue,
yeah,
as late as Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, to me, that really surprised me to the upside. Yeah. And you know, when I'm modeling these types of things, we certainly account for, okay, there's some expected kind of volatility with fees, but I think myself and most miners are probably a little bit conservative because you don't know that something like this is going to happen. But it really actually could be, you know, if we see these events occur, you know, probably not sustainably, but throughout the year, there's going to be some periods where miners are maybe more profitable than they thought they were going to be just as a result of transaction fees.
Yeah, last year when Ordinals launched, I think technically they launched at the end of December 22, but really January 23. Yeah. There was like a huge fee spike around Ordinals at BRC20 specifically in like May of last year. Mm-hmm. And then it got quiet again, but then there was a big run again in the fall. So it does feel like with these types, particularly these token protocols that, I mean, well, both of these have, well, Ordinals from Casey Rotemore, also Runes from Casey, BRC20 built on Ordinals, not from Casey, but these protocols, they're a little sporadic and volatile and when, but they can drive big fee revenue. And presumably, like, I mean, now that you have another one, I mean, this could continue. I mean, it's not, you know, and these fees were specifically around minting, creating these tokens. You know, if you're creating a token, well, once you've created it, like, you know, you don't have to create it again necessarily. Yeah. So it's going to be jump fits and starts, but it does feel like for example, the mempool itself, the queue of pending transactions hasn't cleared in over a year, I think, for the first time ever. So there is a backlog, a perpetual backlog in people wanting to get their transaction onto the Bitcoin blockchain.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's good that there's demand for block space. I think it's actually a way to measure the success of Bitcoin in a way that people really want to transact on chain.
Yeah. Well, let's dig into that a little bit more. So we got Runes and Ordinals, and I know many people, you know, we had Casey on this show last February. It's something we follow. I think it's undeniable that you have to follow it. It's a pretty, like you said, I mean, it's a huge percentage and portion of transactions on the Bitcoin network. So you just got to look at the market and acknowledge that. And so it's relevant. It's very, and if it impacts fees a lot, then it's very relevant for both users and miners and the network. What are your thoughts on Ordinals, generally speaking? Like, you know, I know a lot of Bitcoiners are I would say plenty are ambivalent, which I think is how I sort of think about it. But some are very hostile. They think it's spam. It's not what Bitcoin was designed for. It's Luke Dash Jr. said that that users of Ordinals are lying and tricking the code. What are your thoughts?
Yeah. So I'm definitely not an Ordinals expert, but I think I approach this from a Bitcoin miner's perspective, which really for me is that if it's truly bad for Bitcoin, then it's bad for miners. That's not what I think I've seen to date. Granted, I don't have, you know, the strongest understanding of the space compared to others. I certainly follow it. But for me, if it leads to higher transaction fees for the miner, that's going to be good. And so if it's at least neutral to good for Bitcoin and results in higher transaction fees, miners are probably going to support that. Yeah. I think that, and so, you know, for me, over the last year and a half, it's something I didn't project, but it's been really nice when we've had these periods of high transaction fees. So I certainly like it.
Yeah. Speaking of projections, you come from the you know, modeling world, right? How have you had to adjust your projections? I mean, are you now like building in some like fee multiple, like weighted, like variable now? Like, well, because before, did you even model fee? I mean, we went through a period. I actually published a paper in 2022 called "Why Are Bitcoin Transaction Fees So Low?"
Yeah,
and it was about how basically they'd been rock bottom for several years. Yeah. That's not the case anymore. How are you modeling this? Are you thinking about that?
Yeah, it's a good question because you're right. Like, we almost just totally disregarded fees in our models to some extent, and it changes how you think about it because miners will either model the revenue side of the equation with hash price, which is sort of combining price and network hash rate, which are the two variables that most impact miners, into kind of this one variable, and you just project revenue by doing sort of your hash rate times hash price. And it's a really useful metric. I think Luxor kind of pioneered that, and that's typically the primary reference point that most use. But I think now what you see, if you look at the hash price chart over the last year, it's driven over longer time periods by price and hash rate. So if you sort of compare the hash price chart to a Bitcoin price chart, they'll look fairly similar because you'll see, okay, there's a rise as Bitcoin price rose. Granted, you've also had rising hash rate over that time, which has had sort of the opposite impact that compresses the extent to which it's rose. Mm-hmm. But where you see spikes, it's because of transaction fees. And you'll see this now, it's permanent, it's going to be on the hash price chart forever. is this massive spike at this halving that we just had. And so now I do think it is making miners rethink, okay, do I kind of almost take the easy way out from a modeling standpoint and just use hash price, or do I actually dig into the underlying variables and, you know, have a row in my model for price, have a row in my model for network hash rate, mm-hmm. and have a row for transaction fees as well. And maybe you do start building in some assumptions where, you know, these transaction fees aren't just sort of a close to negligible percent of your total revenue at, like, you know, 1 or 2%, but now suddenly maybe you build in throughout the year a few spikes where you're expecting 50% plus of your revenue to just come from transaction fees. And I do think that's interesting because I think it's certainly something that, you know, like equity analysts that are following public miners, I don't think are thinking about it kind of a deep level. I think miners themselves are thinking about it, but it also even forces some of these analysts to learn a little bit more about transaction right. fees and how it impacts the business and items like that as well.
Yeah, I was thinking about this and you know, we certainly don't talk about single name equities, but on the show, but I was, on Friday night when the fees are going crazy, I was like, market's closed, like, for equities. I wonder if, like, on Monday morning, like, basically publicly traded miners should rip, theoretically.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had an over the weekend news that, say, I don't know, just a big tech company had a massive influx in new revenue, shouldn't the stock go up? And I didn't actually look to see. I think separately there's been weakness in equities in general.
Yeah.
Not anyway, but it should be part of the discussion. Yeah. And by the way, with like L2s and stuff, there are reasons why there should be higher fee environments in the future anyway.
Yeah, exactly. And I think for the one weekend, you could brush it off and say, this was a temporary thing around the halving. It will last for a short time period. It's not going to have a long-term impact on these companies. But if you do start to see it over these much more sustained stretches over the course of months, it will actually require a little bit of rethinking that, like, did everyone actually underproject total revenue that these miners were going to get.
Yeah, and I think what's funny too, to your point about this as an event, I mean, look, there was a really iconic fee event on Ethereum when Yuga Labs launched their token. I forget what the token is called, but like not Bored Apes, the collection, but they have a token, Ape Token, I think, Ape Coin. There was a giant, like, insane, like, rush to like claim it, or I forget, whatever, like right at one moment, and Ethereum network fees dramatically spiked, and you can literally always go back to that chart and see that event. Same way you can go to the Bitcoin chart, by the way, and see Bitcoin fees in December 2017 and know that that was like crypto kitties, right? Like,
yeah,
and similarly, we'll be able to say Runes launch, right? Like, but, and it was predicted. I mean, literally people are on Twitter saying a week ago, like, hey, get your transactions in now. Like, fees are probably going to go crazy. So you actually could predict it if you were following closely. And similarly, you should be able to say, well, if this new big L2 is going to launch, or if this, let's say there's another big Rune project or whatever, and it's a known forward date, like, you should be able to predict that. And it depends how granular, you know, if you model without your business revenue side without fees, then you're just being conservative. But at this point, like, I mean, percentage of miner revenue for Bitcoin fees has historically been like 1-5%.
Yeah, exactly. We had some periods where, you know, it was like 8-15 if, like, during this ordinals kind of period.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, for a lot of time, like 2%.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, where do you, let me get, like, what do you think, like, if we just average the daily, that metric for every day of this year now, if at the end of the year, what would you think? Because I believe we published, we actually published in somewhere, I think Sim on your team tweeted this chart, like the annualized version of that number, the percent.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think last year was like one of the biggest at like 5%. Like,
right.
What do you think it ends up being this year?
Well, I think to date, it's probably been well below 15%.
Yeah.
So we've got a few months, right, where bringing down the average a little bit. And then since the halving, I mean, we're probably averaging over 100%, frankly.
I think it's like, I think if we do every single day, it's like 59-60%.
Yeah.
But that's with like multiple hundreds of percent on Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this might even be a little bit conservative, but I'd probably go around 25-30%. I'll probably be wrong on this.
I was going to guess 20. I mean, I think that's about right, though.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, obviously, the subsidy has declined by half. So, like,
yeah, that's the thing that's worth mentioning.
It goes up, like, no matter what, basically.
Exactly. Like, your base case is that it doubles from the beginning of the year, essentially. So then, you know, the logic is that you're doubling and then also building in some expectation that Runes and Ordinals is going to be a lasting thing that will actually impact this stat by a few percentage points.
Right, yeah, quite interesting. Hey, okay, let's talk about the rest of the year for miners, because one of the other things that we just had a difficulty adjustment up.
Probably only like 15, 20 blocks ago now.
Yeah, and I don't even think that I really should have checked this before we came on the air, but I'm pretty sure we've never really seen like positive difficulty increase right after a halving.
Yeah.
It's almost always down.
Yeah.
Miners earn half as much revenue, theoretically, and they turn off their hash rate, but it's going up.
Yeah.
We're not seeing hash rate come off yet. Maybe we will. What's your sort of expectation like into the summer for hash rate prediction?
Yeah. 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 Projecting network hash rate is something I think about like all day long and then when I'm asleep as well. It's bad.
Well, but your team publishes this every year.
Oh, yeah. We look at it really closely.
For the last like four reports, they've been under. And they've projected significant growth, and then hash rate has exceeded all expectations.
Yes.
So
I think this recent difficulty adjustment, just for starters, you know, the halving did occur towards the end of a difficulty epoch, and so of a difficulty period, and therefore, this will be a more interesting one to me. This next one, because you'll actually have a full period post halving, but I think that this halving in general occurred at a very different. In a very different Bitcoin price kind of period versus the previous one, right? Like the previous one occurred in 2020. If I'm remembering correctly, Bitcoin price was still below $10,000 at the time.
I think it was like eight, nine.
Yeah, I think eight, nine. I think that's right. And so it's just different from where a lot of miners are in terms of are they operating at the margins or not. Back in 2020, there were a lot of miners clearly on the margins because, you know, they maybe made, you know, purchases, plans, even back in 2017, 2018, you know, when Bitcoin price was over $10,000. Then 3 years later, you have kind of growing hash rate. You have, it's amidst a lot of price volatility during, you know, the early stages of COVID.
Yeah, it was like 2 months after that March 12th, 2020 crash to like 3,200.
Yeah. And so that was a more kind of dire period for a lot of miners. And you did see a ton of hash rate come offline. I think this is a little bit different in that we have seen Bitcoin price appreciation, you know, this year and sort of towards the end of last year as well, which I think bailed, frankly, a lot of miners out in terms of like their need to go offline or not. And so, you know, some of the statistics that we do look at and we certainly publish as well are just, you know, the cost to mine for miners and really their marginal cost to mine specifically, which I think about as, you know, their power costs kind of divided by the amount of Bitcoin that they mine, because that's really the point that they would rationally shut off. And so, you know, a lot of miners were hovering, you know, in the high teens, low 20,000s. The halving occurs. Okay, you double that number. Maybe they're producing Bitcoin at around 40,000 plus, some certainly higher in 50,000 plus, but still at where Bitcoin price is today, well above 60,000. I think there's still a little bit of buffer there that's resulting actually in most miners still remaining profitable. Not all, but I think you asked also about what's going to happen over the summer. Well, maybe this next difficulty adjustment, maybe we actually do continue to go up because we don't have to see that many miners go offline, especially if transaction fees end up staying high over the next couple of weeks. But I think what will happen in the summer, you know, increasingly there is a larger and larger percentage of miners that are operating in Texas. And so you kind of have these two competing things that are happening at the same time that I think will lead to a lot of network hash rate volatility, actually, which is that we just had a halving. This is lowering the break-even price for a lot of the miners in Texas. And at the same time, that prices are probably going to rise in Texas from a power cost perspective. So you have these two sort of variables going, like merging together, break-even coming down, power prices going up. And I think there's going to be a lot of curtailment activity across miners in Texas, which at this point is a meaningful percentage of the network. And so you'll see some hash rate come offline there. More curtailment activity, as I said. And I think that we'll probably have a little bit more of hash rate plateauing for a bit over the summer. Unless there's some unfortunate Bitcoin price event, I'm not expecting a huge amount of hash rate to come offline, but maybe we see a little bit of staggered growth as there's more curtailment. There's upgrades of machines rather than some net new machines coming online. But I will still say, like, you know, my expectation is hash rate is going to be higher at the end of the year than it is today.
I can't remember with whom, but it might have been our friend Kevin from Foundry. Or others that we made a bet, and I remember is that I said straight up 1,000 exahash or higher, and people said I was crazy. At like it was like 550 or so, like this, like in the fall.
We could hit 1,000.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's not impossible.
And so let me. Yeah, this is a little aside. I didn't say we might mention this, but let's talk about the machines. I saw a headline today that Block, they've announced that they finished, I think the story is they finished building, developing their Bitcoin mining ASIC chip. I've tweeted about this, but I believe, it's not in my pocket right now. I've got Block's hardware wallet. So they've got now a hardware wallet for Bitcoin. Obviously, they've got Cash App, but they've also got an ASIC.
Yeah.
And did I see Jihan Wu announce a new ASIC or... thinks we're going to get to 2 or 3 nanometers or something?
Yeah, yeah. I think he's really bullish on, I think, where we're going in terms of the efficiency of these chips and the new types of ASICs
that
are coming out.
People really think you could get like below like 7 nanometers like several years ago.
It's just getting better and better. And
that's crazy.
Yeah, I think, you know, one, I applaud everyone who's working on this. I think like this sort of race improving technology, I think, is awesome. I think having more options out there on the market is only good for everyone in the space, actually. I think even the existing manufacturers, I think it's good to have some competition. And I think it can even drive them to improve as well. It does make it hard, though, for miners, you know, making these purchase decisions, right? Because, you know, it's a really significant CapEx outlay when you buy machines, and you've got to get that right. And it's tough when you don't necessarily know when the next machine is going to come out, how efficient that machine is going to be. So it also creates some uncertainty.
Yeah, is that why miners tend, I mean, I don't know if they all do, but from what I've seen, like, they tend to be like, we buy Watts miners, or we buy, you know, what do you call it? Bitmain's machines, because like we just like know, like they like, you know, it's like there might be a new one that spikes that's like super good, but like we couldn't plan for that. But we know that like, you know, Watts Miner is delivering like pretty consistent or whatever. Like it's so much capital. And by the way, you have to send it. Like, do you still have to prepay for machines? Remember we were talking about this at Fidelity like 5 years ago.
Yeah, yeah, it's tough, and I think
you just send money off.
Yeah, yeah, both MicroBT and Bitmain, like they've produced, you know, pretty reliable machines for an extended period of time, and so those definitely are the two largest manufacturers. But yeah, it's still tough for miners. You do still have to prepay. I think both have done a good job actually of adjusting their terms a little bit to accommodate miners, because I think that was a major problem in the previous cycle.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's important to build these relationships with these miners as well, so that you can at least get some sense of, you know, when the next machine has come out. And they're also increasingly offering options to, you know, maybe get an option to buy the next machine when it does come out, if you, you know, purchased the previous machine and things like that.
Let's talk a little bit about Galaxy's mining business. I know some of our listeners are interested. What's going on with it?
Yeah. So I think like I'm actually excited for the summer. So I think, you know, when people talk to me like, oh, like is the halving, you know, bearish? Is it for miners? It's like, well, it's not really bearish for miners. Like I always knew it was going to happen, right? Like, you know, in fact, are you going to ask me 4 years from now if the halving is bearish?
Yeah, you can't be caught off surprise.
No, it's like, yeah, it's always been in my model. You know, ever since I got into mining, I modeled a halving, you know, this year. That being said, for every miner, I don't, you know, I've heard some miners like, oh, I'm looking forward to the halving. I don't understand that necessarily, because your revenue is going to decline, certainly. But I will say, you know, asking about our operation, the one thing I was excited about is I think that, you know, I don't think that there's a miner better prepared for the halving than we are. I truly think, you know, our Helios site down in Dickens County in Texas is the best mining site in the universe. We have, you know, about 200 megawatts operational today and 800 megawatts that we're fully approved for and are building towards. And that type of scale at the lowest cost of power out there, I think cannot be matched. And so I think that, you know, that combination, I think, makes me really, really excited for what we are building at Galaxy Mining.
Yeah, great to hear. I promise we'd reference this, but so we did work together at Fidelity. One of the things that we did when we were both there, we were in different jobs. You were working on Bitcoin mining at Fidelity and later running Bitcoin mining there. I was doing venture, but we did collaborate on an internal employee newsletter. Shout out any Fidelity current or former who are listening. Crypto Brief was our baby. And I recall, in addition to working on that like every Thursday night during COVID, once the sort of like work from home had happened, we were gaming a bit, you and I. I don't think either of us have time to play Call of Duty any longer, but those were good days.
Yeah, no, we were a strong pair on Warzone, I think. You know, like going back and forth between writing updates to the whole Fidelity crew on you know, the latest in the crypto market, and then turning back to some gaming. Yeah, you know, we go back a while now. We're multiple jobs
here
together.
We
yeah, we've been friends for a while.
The Fidelity Mafia in the house, and my friend Brian Wright, co-head of Bitcoin mining at Galaxy. Hey, thank you for coming on Galaxy Brains, Brian.
Yeah, this was awesome. Thank you.
That's it for this week's episode of Galaxy Brains. Thanks to our guests, Bimnet Abibi from Galaxy Trading and Brian Wright from Galaxy Mining, and my friend Captain Youth for collabing on that rap. And you know what? Here it is. Let's roll it out. See you next week. Yeah.
Captain Youth. Tangible coins. Intangible. What was rooted in freedom became funny. Yep. And all these damn suits, they really just want money. Word. New pointers on the fence, but never gonna do nothing. Is we finna sell out or we finna do something? I mean, whoa. Y'all gonna pay taxes in full. We keeping on the low. That's from promise you don't wanna smoke, but if you do, I can roll it up. That a skeefer put you in a sp and you don't even know what's up. 100 bands, money man, but I don't even fold this stuff. We went digital in 09, y'all ain't really know enough. Yeah. Keep tweeting, grifting, acting a fool. I love that, I just stack. Y'all watching the news, wearing the mask. The tiniest stack, capitulated fast, near the bottom at that. This is too sad, but I don't feel bad for him. You get in where you deserve. And I was stacked now before the having makes it worse. The supply's finna dwindle while the price is leaving Earth. And your market share is smaller because I got to it first. Meanwhile, your fiat gon' inflate away and die. They call it printing money, but it's really stealing time. Every promise that they make, I promise it's a lie. Won't you keep the CPI? Won't you open up your eye?
There's a thorn on the track, and I'm back with a hit. Scarce coin on the map, but never scarce when I spit. Forever buying the dip and flying the whip. Never lying when I'm trying to dip. A couple bips, yo, duos in the room, so we rapping the deuce. Intangible coins and El Captain of Youth. Live from the booth, dead end off North Avenue, preaching truth. If you don't hear it now, that's on you. And if you won't save yourself, what more could I do? I already tried to help and you thought I was a fool. Now you're on the sidelines like, what should I do? Buy it now or wait for the price to come down a few? Always asking, never acting. I said to sack sats and keep the coins cold to avoid the black hats. A bulky big multi-sig to hold the whole stack, plus a heavy ass chain that could never roll back.
I don't feel bad for them, they get in what they deserve. But I was stacked now before the having makes it worse. The supply's finna dwindle while the price is leaving Earth. And your market share is smaller because I got to it first. Meanwhile, your fiat gonna inflate away and die. They call it printing money, but it's really stealing time. Every promise that they make, I promise it's a lie. Won't you peep the CPI? Won't you open up your eye?
Yeah.
Captain, you intangible coins.
Live from New York City. We out here.
Dead end North Ave. Yeah.
You better buy before the halving.
You're running out of time.
The steal of the time.
There's no time.
Thanks for listening to Galaxy Brains, the weekly podcast from Galaxy Research. If you enjoy the show, please like, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. To follow Galaxy Research, sign up for our weekly newsletter at gdr.email, read our content at galaxy.com/research, and follow us on Twitter at GLXY Research. See you next week.